I'm talking today with Scott Brand, who is the candidate for State House District 136 out in the Galleria area. Scott, you are actually running against a member of the leadership in the State House, Beverly Woolley. Does that change the way you run a race like this?
Well, it doesn't change the way I'm running this race, since I'm a first-time candidate. I'm running the race as I believe necessary to win the race, whether she was a member of the leadership or not.
Okay. Now, Representative Woolley was involved in the TRMPAC deal a couple of years ago. There was documentation of her essentially visiting various corporate clients and writing down what they wanted in return for their donations. How aware are people of this, and you know, how much of a theme is it in your campaign?
Well, I think it's clear that Representative Woolley was not only involved, but was involved from the very beginning of the TRMPAC fund solicitation. I think it was Susan Lilly that came to town, a professional fundraiser hired by Delay, if I recall, and met with Beverly Woolley, and they went to corporations and early on started soliciting funds. There is a document that's probably been posted or reviewed by many indicating who they visited, how much would be contributed, and generally what their interests were in return for the contributions. As far as the public awareness, I'm not sure. It has not played a major part in the campaign, because quite simply, the campaign, as far as I'm concerned to date, has been one of a positive nature about Scott Brand, bringing a new voice to the 136th district. Beverly Woolley has had little or no opposition. I think there's been a Libertarian candidate run. There is in the current race. But as far as anyone actively campaigning in this district, it hasn't occurred. I felt it necessary to let the public know who I am and why I'm running and the issues I feel important to this district and to the state. Do I think the public should know? I think, particularly in light of what occurred yesterday, not in our race, in the 136th, but I found it instructive, possibly, that the Republican Party doesn't understand the moral and ethical high ground that I think all politicians and members of the public strive for and should strive for. The write-in candidate for DeLay's district had a fundraiser, I believe at the Hyatt, and I was a bit taken aback to see that one of the invited guests by Shelley Sekula Gibbs was Tom DeLay. Here is a man who I think has let down his district, has surely let down, I think, the system, and has tainted it, and yet he's an invited guest. I think politicians above all have to stand on a moral and ethical high ground, and to invite someone who has stepped aside under a serious cloud of suspicion and criminal indictment just amazes me. Beverly Woolley was not indicted. I believe she was investigated by the grand jury. However, I think at some point in time the public should be made aware of her connection with TRMPAC, because it wasn't a peripheral connection. It was a very strong and ongoing connection. She, in fact, was a member of the board of TRMPAC.
Okay. Now, this is a Republican district. You've told me in the past that you grew up in a Republican family, and you know, are now running, you are a Democrat now because you disagree with where the Republican Party comes from. How do you run in a district that is Republican and convince people that maybe they should see things as you have and consider a change?
Well, I think first and foremost, Charles, like I said, I'm trying to let the members of this district or the residents of the district get to know me, and let them know there is an alternative for once to Beverly Woolley. I am very, very active in this district as far as living here. My son is a senior at Memorial High School, and we go to multiple events. And I would say that when I'm there, I'm outnumbered by multiples to one, Democrats, Republicans. But I talk to them. They know I'm running. Many of them are very good friends, and in fact, many of them were first to put my yard signs in their yards, and they're Republicans. They are not happy with the educational decisions made by the Republican Party and made by the Republican leadership. They are not happy with the inadequate funding of the schools. They are not pleased with the dropout rate and teacher turnover, and they believe it's time for change. And what I'm told by many of them is they just are tired of the stench, as I said, that lack of moral, ethical high ground that they want and deserve from their politicians and elected officials.
Your background is as a trial attorney, which is probably maybe next to Hollywood activists, the biggest boogeyman that the Republican Party likes to drag out about the Democratic Party. How do people react to that, and what do you tell them when their first impression is that trial lawyers are greedy?
Well, interestingly, it's not been an issue to date. I make no bones about it. I don't hide it. It's on the bio that I have published everywhere. I run a small ad in the Memorial area newspaper, and it sets out that I am a trial lawyer, that I'm a member of Texas Trial Lawyers Association, the Association of Trial Lawyers of America, and no one has said, oh, you're one of them, you're a bad guy. I think many members of the public look at it and say, you're a lawyer, you understand the law, we need more people in Austin with that type of training and background who can help craft the laws necessary to direct Texas through the 21st century. It's just not been an issue yet.
Okay. An issue in the past that has concerned trial lawyers, of course, has been tort reform legislation. It's gone on. There's now caps on medical malpractice awards, and I'm sure that this issue will come up again because the tort reform lobby is very strong. What is your opinion of the medical malpractice caps that were passed, and what do you think can or should be done about any further tort reform legislation?
Well, the medical malpractice caps passed by the legislature were passed, I think, with a lot of smoke and mirrors. If the public wants caps, then the public should have caps, if that's really what they want. However, they should be given full and truthful information about insurance rates, about the effect of lawsuits on premium dollars, and they quite simply were not. The Republicans, in my opinion, in pushing for tort reform and TLR, use a lot of fear tactics, and those fear tactics quite simply avoided the truth. Many articles have now been written since the caps and since House Bill 4, major tort reform, and all really have refuted the alleged statistics and facts put forth by the leadership in TLR as it regarded the need for tort reform. I will tell you this. I believe in democracy. I absolutely do. As you leave my office today, you'll stare at a framed document. It is the Purple Heart my uncle received in the Second World War. I never knew him, obviously. He died, actually, along with my mother's first husband in the conflict. They didn't die to manipulate democracy. They died to promote democracy. When we manipulate it, when it's manipulated for the benefit of, I think, any segment of society, it's absolutely wrong. And why do I say it's manipulated? We had to vote on a constitutional amendment to allow the caps on damages to prevail, because they're, particularly under the Wrongful Death Act or under the Personal Injury Survival Act, because although the legislature can generally do what they want with the wrongful death, with pure personal injury being a creature of the common law, there were problems with the open courts requirement of our Constitution. And so they had to amend the Constitution. If we're going to amend the Texas Constitution, and it's necessary, again, I'm not against it, but I think we need to do it at a point in time that we strive to get the maximum voter participation and not minimum. The forces behind the constitutional amendment, which barely passed, by the way, and was defeated in Harris County, pushed it through at a special election, not a general election.
September of 2003, as I know.
And they did so because they knew that, in their polls, I haven't seen their polls, but I guarantee you they did, and I guarantee you their polls demonstrated that at a general election it would not pass, as it was not favored by the majority of the citizens.
Well,
of the
in particular, they were worried about the sure-to-be-a high-turnout mayoral election in Houston in 2003 having an effect on it, which
absolutely.
Was in September and not November.
Absolutely, and we had an election a very short time after, and so one has to wonder why we wasted tax dollars for a special election just to pass a constitutional amendment, although there were other amendments. But where I'm going with this is I think if we're going to amend the Constitution, it ought to be at a point in time where we have maximum voter participation and not a minimum voter participation so we can manipulate the vote. And that's what they did. One of the first things I would do, as I told the Houston Chronicle during my interview, would be to push for a constitutional amendment, one more if we need it because our Constitution is rather thick, that requires such amendments be at general elections so that we can have maximum voter participation deciding the direction of this great state and our Constitution.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about what the legislature was up to more recently, the special session in which property tax cuts were passed and a new business tax was created. Is that new business tax going to affect you personally as a trial lawyer?
Well, we don't know its exact effect, but actually I think it will benefit me. I paid my franchise taxes last year, and in looking at the new act and talking to my tax consultant, it may well reduce or eliminate mine with many of those provisions and how you figure your gross versus net taxable under that act. Obviously, I'm not against funding the state of Texas. We need to properly fund our schools, and we need to fund them at a level that isn't just sufficient to keep them open, but we need to fund them at a level so that we can have absolute first-class educational institutions. There's a special report by the comptroller that came out in March 2006 that indicates over 40,000 to 50,000 children dropped out of public schools in 2005 and over 37,000 teachers left the public schools. That's just, we can't keep operating our schools losing kids and losing teachers. President Bush touted his No Child Left Behind Act. Well, folks, if we're going to have No Child Left Behind, we can't have any teacher left behind nor educational institution. We have to fund them at levels that will allow for sufficient staff, pay teachers as the professionals they are, dedicated to educating our children. I don't want to homeschool my children. I have no qualms with those that do. I just don't. But I want them to have a first-class education. I said, I'm an economic conservative, and I truly believe each individual has to control their own destiny. I believe in self-reliance and individual responsibility. But I also know that many of us aren't given natural talents. And I know all talents are developed, but when I say natural talents, I see people who can paint and who can sing and write music. And I know they study hard to do that. But some have just natural talents and abilities, and I envy them. I wasn't given such a talent. I can do stick figures. and I can't tell you no to music. But I was given a gift of a beautiful brain that was that through education has allowed me to succeed. I paid my way through law school, and without those early tools of public schools shaping me and forming me, I don't know what I would have been. I could have easily just been in the factories, but I didn't want to be there. I had one way out and one way up and one way to success, and it was through the public education that was provided to me. And we owe that to all of the children of this great state. We owe them the absolute duty to bring to them the tools they need to succeed and to be self-reliant and independent in the leaders of Texas, this nation, and the world. And that number one tool is education. And let me tell you, I think the leadership over the last few years has simply fallen down in their obligation to the youth of this state.
The reports from both the Comptroller's Office and the Legislative Budget Board are that the new business tax is not going to generate enough revenue to pay for the property taxes. What do you think the legislature will need to do about that, and what in particular would you like to do about it if you're elected to the next legislature?
Well, my concern is that the franchise tax will not be sufficient. My other concern is we have to quit relying so heavily on property taxes, where we're simply driving people out of their homes almost due to the rising property tax burden. I think we've got to look at alternative taxes. Taxes, just to mention taxes can be the death to a politician, but I'm not afraid to mention it because we have to generate revenues. We can't go out and rob banks. We can't print it. We have to collect it. I think we ought to give serious look to a consumption tax across the board, which will allow us to lower property taxes. I'm not against a small property tax, but I surely would like to see it either eliminated or reduced to where the school districts can have a local option tax for local option needs in the school districts. But across the state, we rely more on a consumption tax. I believe if we do that, we will bring to the table many, many more taxpayers who are now not really in the system. They live in apartments or high-density housing and simply don't contribute sufficiently to the state coffers. And if we can spread that base of people participating from whom we collect taxes, be it ad valorem or consumption tax, then the overall tax to the property owners can be reduced, and we can generate sufficient funds to properly and adequately fund our schools.
When you say consumption tax, are you talking about like extending the sales tax to include services?
Well, I'm not sure it's services. We may have to increase the sales tax to some small degree, and I know we have a rather large sales tax in Harris County, so that's a difficult thing to talk about, but we have to look at it. I think many services are already covered by the sales tax. There are some professionals, I think, exempt from that, but most services are now included.
Okay. Because, I mean, that subject did come up in the previous legislature. That was one approach they had taken, which would have included taxing, among other things, legal services. But that approach went down, and the business tax was resurrected. The other thing that a lot of candidates are talking about this year is immigration. What role, if any, do you believe the state legislature plays in border security, illegal immigration, and what steps, if any, would you like to see or not see taken?
Well, that's obviously it's a very important issue, particularly to Texas and the rest of the nation, but since we share the border with Mexico, it's a very important issue. It really is a national issue, and it's the national government's duty to control our borders with the countries that border us, and in fact control immigration through with countries that don't border us. They're not doing their job. number one, we need to call upon them to do their job and do it adequately. However, I don't think Washington gets it. So they need direction from the leaders of Texas on what needs done. I'm not for building fences. I'm not for building walls, because fences and walls create barriers. We are in a global world. I am, however, for controlling illegal immigration into this country. I think we need the Mexican workforce here. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But again, as I talked about a consumption tax, if they're going to come and work and be part of our society and enjoy the benefits of this society, they need to pay their fair share. How do they do that? Well, we've got to create some type of guest worker program. I know there are, even in the Republican Party, there are those who absolutely refused to hear that, but Senator McCain says he thinks that's the best way to go. And I have to agree with that. I think we need a guest worker program, not just for Mexico, but for Canada. And it's got to work both ways. We need to make sure that we know who's here, that we can ID who's here. I have been told, I haven't seen the statistics, Charles, on this, but that although there is obviously illegal immigration across the Rio Grande, our border with Mexico, that is not the big problem. The bigger problem is those who come into this country legally on visas and overstay. That's a federal government issue that needs resolved. They need to have the manpower or the desire to enforce the visa program. They need to know where people are, and they need to ensure that they're not overstaying their visas. It's unfortunate, the incident that occurred here in Houston, most unfortunate. Any death is unfortunate, but the death of the Houston police officer by the illegal immigrant, again, fans this flame. And unfortunately, again, it was the federal government that failed. He had apparently been picked up, sent back to Mexico once, as I understand it, and then came back. The people of this state need to know that the folks they're rubbing shoulders with and they're mixing with are here for the right reasons. I'm not for photo ID cards for everybody, because it starts restricting the personal freedoms of those of us here legally. But I think we have to control the border in some fashion and make sure that as people come and go, they're doing it legally, they're doing it properly, and if they're going to stay and work here, that they're paying their fair share of the benefits they receive here.
All right. You sort of touched on this, but a big issue in Houston locally, of course, has been crime. What do you think the state legislature should be doing to help Houston and other cities deal with an increase in crime lately?
Well, in my particular race, it hasn't really been an issue, although I border on the side of West Houston, the West Chase area, where it has been a very large issue. Interestingly, I've been to a number of the meetings that have been held, and there are those who believe that without one additional cent, but simply reallocation of HPD manpower, that the West Side can be properly covered. I think that type of issue is more a local issue. There are things that the state government needs to do, but I think Houston needs to look at itself and say, why are we not allocating enough manpower on the West Side versus the East Side? At one of these meetings, one of the experts hired by the group got up and did an analysis of the number of crimes in given areas, the manpower deployed, and it seemed the West Side was on the losing end of that. That when you look at other areas in the city, they've got more manpower per population per crime incident than the West Side in reallocation.